All right, good morning, everyone. So when I started to put this talk together, it was one that I really truly felt this was really the true interaction of economics and animal science, and really how we're looking at, you know, genetic selection decisions based on the current market, but also what we expect the current market to be. Before I get started, you know, I think there is some important things to remember about economists, since we're going to have two economists up here. We've most of our trained animal science are in the production frame in here. First of all is we have a firm grasp on the obvious, right? And we can make the obvious even more complicated. And so when we go through these decisions, they may seem obvious to you, but realizing why, you know, they are so obvious and why the market does work the way it does, and it works maybe the way it's supposed to, and we're able to really base our decisions on what we expect profitability to be. Second is we're better at predicting the past than the future, right? So I can tell you exactly why something happened over the last 10 years, why we liquidated the cattle herd, but it's very difficult for me to tell you where the next 10 years is going. And realizing that's where we're basing a lot of our decisions on when we're talking about genetic selection, because it's not just today, it's tomorrow, it's the day after that, and it's years down the road. So I wanted to start off with the obvious and state the obvious that as cattlemen, we know that genetic selection should be based on long-term profitability. But we very much live in a short-term world where prices fluctuate, you know, daily, weekly, from year to year, quite a bit of variation, and that changes our profitability outlook in our current state as well as, you know, where we're going into the future. I like to always look at the example of look at corn prices. I started at Iowa State University really at almost the peak of corn prices. And so when I had been looking at, you know, expected profitability for cattle feeding, for hog finishing, for really at the livestock sector, I was always in the frame of mind, you know, coming into this job, $2-3 corn. That was the equilibrium. And yes, you know, we were going to see some moving around depending on supply and demand conditions. But long term, we're always going to revert to the mean. And then we get $7 corn. And then I hear a lot of people saying, you know, we're at a new equilibrium. So we should start including those prices in our equilibrium. Well, that changes the outlook very much. And now look at where we are, you know, coming off those historic prices. So it's very much looking at the circumstances of today does impact those decisions, even though they should be based on long-term profitability. So we really got a sense. We surveyed the Iowa cow-calf producers and also the feedlot operators, mostly commercial producers in Iowa. And two questions that I was really glad we asked, because it fit this presentation as well, but it also kind of gave me a ranking of how cow-calf producers view cost of production marketing on their operations. So two of the questions we had asked is, how important will the following factors be for improving cost of production on your operation? And so the percent here is percent of very important and percent important. So actually, they could have relayed, had everything 100%. So I did the rankings here. Individual producers didn't do the rankings. Why that's important is to see where these really fall in kind of the continuum of how producers view cost of production. So not surprisingly, managing feed costs, productivity of pasture acres, ability to feed my own hay and silage, very important for the commercial cow-calf producer. And what surprised me a bit when I asked them, you know, what is their cost of production, was genetic selection ranked pretty high on that list, right below, you know, right below health management and feed management. Genetic selection. Now, if I would have asked, well, if it's return on investment, maybe that would have ranked it higher. But just purely cost of production, producers ranked genetic selection. Why I mentioned the return on investment is you see here, we have estrus synchronization, artificial insemination, ranked very low for improving cost of production because there's a high upfront cost. But longer term, you see the return on that investment. Then we look at producers asked, do they agree or strongly agree of changing the following practices would expand their marketing opportunities. Commercial cow-calf producers, genetic selection program ranked second highest there. So they view that as expanding their marketing opportunities. What really surprised me is we asked feedlot operators to rank the following traits, so from important to very important, for the feeder cattle that they buy. So remember, the cow-calf producer, second most was, I can increase my marketing opportunities. But what does the feedlot operator really care about? Care about the cattle, the condition. I want to put that weight on. I can put that weight on relatively cheap in this market. I want those animals to be healthy. You know, genetic selection, while it could have been ranked really high because all of these could have been ranked at 100%, we see a very stark decline really at, you know, the breed background and genetic selection information. So I think there is a little bit of transparency maybe that is lost in some of that information when you see how the cow-calf producers view importance of genetic selection both for their cost of production but also their marketing opportunities and really what producers are willing to pay for. And some of this may be that, you know, I rank my reputation of the seller pretty high. I know they have good genetics, so maybe that trumps some of that. But just realizing how that continuum there, you know, there needs to be some transparency to fill maybe some of that gap between those sectors in the industry. So we've heard quite a bit of outlook. I want to really point to the positive factors as outlook as we talk about building the cow herd and how that impacts genetic selection decisions. Historic tight beef and cattle supplies, you know, tightest since 1962 in beef cow numbers. Beef supplies, we've continued to see year-over-year declines. We're not through it yet. Likely to see a decline in 2015 and potentially 2016 as we continue to build that cow herd. Attractive beef-to-feed price ratios. So 2014 may have been a little bit better than 2015, especially for the cattle feeding sector, but still attractive ratios. We look at cost of production purely versus the revenue stream. Strong retail demand, both domestic and export. And I think that really can't be overstated, how strong demand has been. If I look at the last 18 quarters, how I measure demand, so it's how they value per capita consumption. So we can have a higher price offset decreased consumption, which we very much have been doing. The last 18 quarters, we've seen an increase in beef demand. That's really been able to drive the prices to where they're at in the industry. And finally, initiated expansion. I think we're pretty aware that we've seen expansion in the industry. The real question is how slow, how fast this is going to be. How does that impact profitability down the road and the decisions that you're making today as far as selection and as far as building your cow herd? So record prices in the industry. You know, we've seen, if you especially compare the first half of 2015 with the first half of 2014, those are record prices. Overall, 2015-2014 is going to look like a very much similar year as far as prices. But one important factor about this is there's tremendous cash at stake. If you look at any really sector of the cattle industry, I measure profitability in cattle finishing from a cash market basis. The most two historical periods for profitability, this is looking at Iowa estimates, was October 2003 and this last October 2014. Over $300 per head profitability, Lee estimates. But it costs double to get that profitability here in 2014 than it did in 2003. So while the return on investment this last year was 15%, it was nowhere near the 41% we've seen in 2003. That's really important to keep in mind that when we see these historic prices, and while they are profitable, maybe not quite the return on investment is there that we've seen historically. And I think this is a very much opportunity and threat situation for different producers. Think about the cattle industry. We have 700,000 cattle owners. We look at the cow-calf sector primarily. That's going to really drive the decisions, the size of this industry in years to come. There are a lot of decisions, and they're going to view this situation a lot differently, and that's going to impact what we look like in the next several years. So why did you ask me to come talk to you today? You know, how do current market incentives affect genetic selection decisions? So we look at market incentives, historic levels of profitability in the cow-calf sector. Cow-calf sector in tight cattle supplies, historically, they've been the most ones to benefit. So you need to bid down or you need to decrease supplies until you bid high enough prices throughout the sector. That trickles into the cow-calf industry, and you see record returns in the industry. Now, historically, $100, $120 returns over cash cost, you see an expansion in the industry. But think about the industry the last couple of years. 2009, economic recession, all commodity prices declined. Then we've seen a regional drought in 2011 in the Southern Plains, a national drought in 2012. All that uncertainty really raised the likely level of expected return needed for expansion of the industry. Now, I think we doubled down on a lot of factors. Strong beef demand has pushed a lot of this. And we're seeing record returns in the industry. When we think about these record returns, we all know the biologics of the industry. We can't make cattle appear very quickly, right? I mean, we're talking, when we look at other industries like, you know, impact of avian influenza, we know that that industry can respond rather quickly. Impact of PEDV in the hog industry, it takes months, but we can build those supplies back up. We've seen reductions in the cattle herd due to a lot of those impacts that I had discussed. Well, that takes years to build that cattle herd. So in this short term, what is the current market incentivizing? It's more calf production. And really, that calf production is becoming of live calves and weight on those calves. So Darrell Peel, in one of his cow-calf corners, really summed it up well, that we look at, you know, the pounds of calf weaned per exposed female. So we're only going to get the calf crop that we know we're going to get. Yes, we're going to expand over the next couple of years and build that calf crop. But given the calf crop we have right now and the ones that we're expecting in the near term, we need to ensure those extra pounds. We need to ensure those pounds are there. We can do it through conception rates, calving percentage, pre-weaning calf death loss. Those are relatively lowly heritable traits, right? And so those traits are a lot of the traits that, you know, haven't seen about genetic selection through the years. We know there is some heritability there, but those are a lot of management traits, right? So take, for example, if I look at my conception rate, could I get 100% conception rate in my cow herd? Or pretty close to it, right? Well, what am I going to have to do? That's going to increase my breeding season. It's going to increase a lot of costs to do that. Is it worth doing that? It's probably worth increasing it a little bit this year than it was maybe 2-3 years ago, right? So what should I be doing? I should be increasing my marginal costs to equal those marginal revenue. So marginal revenues are higher. We've seen the chart with cow-calf returns, record returns. So I should be increasing some of those costs to ensure I have a live calf to sell. And if I can do that by putting extra pounds on that calf, on weaning weights, I should be doing that too, as well as in the short term. Also, when we look at, you know, genetic selection decisions of how these current markets impacting that, think about the current market. You know, this market, we're going to see, you know, prices eventually start to decline, and we want those management traits to help ensure some of the, you know, what's to come in the market. So management traits are very important, although they are relatively lowly heritable. All right, so some economists speak. To give you what really expectations of what this industry is likely to, how it's likely to evolve over the next couple of years, and how that's going to impact profitability, and how that's going to impact, you know, what decisions you're making today for the long run. So expected profitability, I highlighted there, record profitability, costs haven't increased as fast as revenues, and so we are seeing still a good return on investment. But textbook example of a commodity industry. A high-value commodity industry, though. So I don't want to say, you know, it looks like every other commodity industry. The beef industry is very high-valued, has a quality product, but it operates like a textbook commodity industry. What does that mean? Long-run economic profits are zero. So not accounting profits, so your profits on the books look good, but economic profits mean that the long-run expected profits, when you take into consideration, you know, unpaid labor and management, all those other, you know, costs that we don't typically look at, those economic profits are zero. So what does that mean? Well, the industry, when we see very profitable times like this, we're going to see expansion in the industry, and we're also going to see new entrants into the industry, because I want to get in. It's very profitable. Well, what's that going to do? That's going to increase supplies, and that's going to decrease prices eventually. Now, there's a lot of noise in there, though, because we see supply and demand is going to dictate what those prices are, how long that profitability lasts, and then eventually how people start to downsize or exit the industry when we come to more typical levels of profitability. So we've seen quite a few of these graphs. I'm going to go through a couple of these rather quickly, but there is a few about replacement heifers that I do want to highlight. So first, looking at just the cattle cycle. Now, I think we're all in agreement that we don't need the size of the cattle herd that we've seen in the 1970s. We've become that much efficient in beef production. But what has changed when we look at just cattle cycles in general is they don't behave like they used to. So cattle cycles, you know, if you go back into history, and not even that far in history, you typically were able to really look at the cattle cycle and really kind of tease out what prices were expected to be. Now, I would contend that this day and age, those cattle cycles have changed. We've seen deeper troughs and lower peaks. There have been longer, more extended periods. And there's a lot of other factors that are impacting, you know, and dictating what the size of that cattle herd is. So a lot more volatility in there and a little bit more difficult to benchmark maybe some of my expansion and reduction decisions based on just on cattle cycles. We've seen this graph before where really we've declined in that cow herd since 1975 year over year, but we've produced the same amount of beef production. That's going to be a continued factor to focus on through genetic selection because the most efficient will survive. That, you know, keeps driving that in this industry. Cattle numbers this last year, you know, we've seen a slight increase in the cattle numbers. I think what's more important to look at the cattle numbers as far as what does our base herd really look like, because there's a lot of differences we look at the cattle herd. So this is the number of beef cows. The big black numbers are the percentage of the U.S. herd. And so these are kind of defined from the western region to the southeast region. And the number below that is the increase this last year, so January 2014 to January 2015. So the largest percentage of the U.S. herd is in the general Great Plains region. Now, we've seen those numbers decline over the years, but as a percentage of the herd, their decline was lower than, say, for example, the Southern Plains. And so we've seen that almost represent about 30% of the industry. Now, this is, you know, beef cows, so how USDA defines beef cows. So there's probably a wide range in age there. What I think it's more important to really look at when we talk about genetic selection decisions and making genetic progress is this young productive herd that we have. So we've seen the last 4 years, year-over-year increase in beef heifers raised for beef cow replacement. This is the first year I think we're going to really start to make a difference with those numbers. We're actually at a number above the 1990s that we can start to push this herd ahead. What I think is most important when it comes to the genetic selection, when just looking at inventory numbers, is this is the youngest herd we've ever seen in the history of the data. So USDA has collected this data since 1960, the youngest herd in the history of the data. So a lot of potential for making genetic progress based solely on the inventory of the U.S. cattle herd. So again, we can also look at this U.S. cattle herd. We've seen the productive cow herd and the distribution. Well, we can look at this young distribution, the distribution of the young heifers held for replacement. So if we look at 2015, remember, as a percentage of the U.S. cow herd, Great Plains was leading the region, similar with the heifers held for replacement, leading the region at 22%, when the U.S. average is about 19.5%. So, I mean, we're just talking decimal points, but if you look at, from a ranking standpoint, the Great Plains, the number of cows and the number of heifers has the potential for growth and really being a leader in national expansion. Now, the western region, while they have, you know, productive cows, they've been pretty stagnant in the beef cow herd, and we know they're dealing with, you know, continuous issues in due to drought-like situations. Southeast region, I think it's important to note that region, not just because that's where we are here today, but also because that region hasn't dealt with the drought-like conditions that a lot of other states have over the last several years. So they've really had a more approach where they've been able to maintain their cow herd along the way and really benefit, you know, from these early profitability signs, and maybe aren't needed as much expansion as other, you know, states in the U.S. that, you know, had seen the large declines over the last several years. Okay, so kind of taking this inventory into mind, you know, looking at these decisions, you know, I scanned a lot of the research, and you know, a lot of the research says, well, you got to be really careful when you're making genetic selection. You know, it should be based on long-term profitability. But how do you go about figuring out what long-term profitability is? We've seen that prices have been very volatile the last several years. And when we look at even long-term prices, now do we consider feeder cattle prices that they're today, is that the new equilibrium? Are we going to go back to, you know, feeder cattle prices at a dollar? I don't think that's likely the case, but, you know, we may not be at the new equilibrium, and we're going to see a decline in prices. So I think important here is, you know, really looking at short-term prices. There's a big fear that you're going to have the right cattle at the wrong time. So if you're looking at genetic selection decisions now and thinking this profitability is going to last for 4, 5, 6, 7 years, productive life of a new female in the herd, you know, that may be the wrong cattle or the right cattle at the wrong time. So we had seen this graphic too, and I also, this is nominal prices. I also looked at it deflated. But I think it's real important to look at, we have a lot of rules of thumb in the industry, you know, and one of them I know is when you looked at background decisions, adding value of gain, you could kind of look at that turnover from, you know, maybe a 4-weight, 5-weight steer to a 7-weight steer. And really, if that was in the optimal ratio, you know, there was potential to, you know, value proposition to add some weight to those animals. Well, that ratio has gotten really out of whack in the current market, right? Because relatively cheap feed prices, you know, I want to put that gain on myself. We've seen those prices, you know, bid up, and, you know, those ratios very much out of whack. But again, do we think we're going to be back in the 5-year average? Do we think we revert really back to the 20-year average? You know, those are all decisions that are going to impact that optimal trait selection in this current environment. I think a better one to really look at is when we look at price ratios. Because price ratios, and this is just looking at revenue stream and cost stream, you know, this kind of gives you at least a ballpark of what those margins are going to be. And can you tell me what this ratio is going to be in the next year? Pretty difficult, right? I mean, you could think, well, you know, even in this recent market, so 2011, you know, I've been trending up since then. Have conditions changed quite a bit from 2011 to 2015? Absolutely, right? But the ratio held true. What about when we look at long run? Well, long run cuts it right down in the middle, right? I think this is why, you know, coming back to that statement is, you really don't want the right cattle at the wrong time or vice versa. You know, if we just kind of expect that these ratios really revert to their mean and let management take care of this situation. I mean, we have tremendous management and expertise and production capabilities in the beef cattle industry. So, you know, why let a lot of our decisions dictate or ride on, you know, current incentives in the market when we can do that with management of the beef cattle. Okay, so stating the obvious again. We all know this, right? So economic returns earned by future generations of progeny should influence current genetic selection. But there's no crystal ball, right? And even at best, economists have a broken crystal ball. But we do kind of have some guidance in the industry that I do help think kind of benchmark where we may be going, and we can use some economic tools to help some of those current genetic selection decisions. So U.S. beef cow herd, two institutions in the U.S., do 10-year projections. Now, I'm glad they do them because I'm not willing to do 10-year projections. But what I take away from this is, one, someone's going to be really overwhelmed. Someone's going to be really underwhelmed by what this actual cattle herd is going to look like. So it ranges from Food Ag Policy Research Institute says the next 10 years we're going to increase 2.6% the cattle herd. We're going to see kind of that traditional cattle cycle. If we look at USDA, that's looking about 17%. And I think we could easily talk two different stories that are going to say why the industry is going to look like this as far as size. So if we say, you know, continued growth in retail, domestic export demand, that could really drive, continue to help drive prices. USDA, maybe a little bit more accurate. We could see some production-related challenges, continued drought pop up in additional regions. That may look more like the FAPRI. But think about the decisions you're making today are based on a lot of different characteristics that could happen over the next 10 years. So that would dictate prices. So if we USDA says continued growth in cattle numbers, well, that's going to keep encouraging production. It's going to keep encouraging expansion. It's going to keep prices higher for feeder cattle. It's going to keep prices higher for fed cattle. The industry is going to continue to expand. But what's it going to come at the expense of? Returns in the industry. You know, and so this is FAPRI. This is more of the conservative approach here. But while returns decrease about 25%, you know, we're going to see just continued slight increase in cost of production. And so, you know, I go back to the textbook example of a commodity industry. By, you know, 2015, 2024 compared to 2015, 84% decline in profitability. And then we could start to see this, you know, replay itself where we're going to bid up those profits to see expansion in the industry. So what I want to do for the remaining time I have left is really talk about cattle selection or genetic selection in the context of, you know, important decisions when it comes to culling a cow and replacement of that cow. So the market has worked essentially when you look at genetic progress, right? We've incentivized culling of beef cows in the market. Kind of the older, less productive cows in our herd. And we've kept around, we've increased replacements of you know, young heifers in a herd. So by definition, I know that's not an official definition by some of genetic progress in the industry, but we've moved that average higher just given the inventory that we have. Culling rates, you know, I like to benchmark culling rates. Anything below 9%, we see expansion of the industry. We're right there here in 2014. So two decisions that I want to talk about for the remaining time is, and these are very producer-specific decisions, but very large implications for an individual operation, but also kind of the vitality of the entire industry. Now, these tools, they're Excel spreadsheets. They're available at Iowa State University websites. I would encourage you very much to use your own data when using these. Please don't go away and say, Lee Schultz said this, and then the market went the other way, and then I'm answering a lot of phone calls. So I've had that situation. So I'm just very much doing this from a general standpoint of where I see the market going and maybe some factors to look at. So Beef Magazine, about a year ago or a little over a year ago, they surveyed cow-calf producers, said, you know, 84% said, I'm holding back heifers this year. And about 37% said, I'm buying some as well. Well, there's an important decision to make there, right? That kind of buy versus raise. And I want to make this when there's kind of a marginal decision. If I'm set up to raise heifers, you know, that might be the Trump decision there. But also, if I'm not set up to raise heifers, I don't have the facilities to do it, I don't have the feed available, I don't have the labor available, well, that's not a decision that's likely you know, even viable in my context. But a lot of times, there's decisions of, you know, should I expand that heifer raising operation or can I reduce it a bit? And both have implications. So should I raise? Easy enough? Yes, if it truly costs you less to raise than to buy. But also, I think some other factors come in, and it's not just that simple. So also, my genetic base is acceptable already. So I have good calving ease, milk production. You know, I think I also consider the meat impact, so weaning weight impact there. Your environment is stressful for imported heifers. So think about one of those first slides I sent. You know, death loss is very important in this market. I need something to sell. And so, you know, that could be an impact there if I just want to raise because of that stress level. I think the biggest one is I'm just worried about open market availability and cost. Everyone wants in this market now, right? That's bid up those replacement female prices. So it might be a decision that I should just buy. Well, if it truly costs you less to buy than to raise, I mean, you know, from a one-to-one standpoint looking at the market, maybe not, but there's some other factors. You know, if you value alternative uses of your money and or your time, so I could sell that heifer calf and buy her back at 22 months of age. And, you know, I didn't spend a lot of expense, time, effort to do that. You know, you value the reduced bull needs. You know, your genetic control is valued and worse than desired. So if I really want to make some genetic progress, I might be in the open market looking for some superior females. And if you want to just grow the herd faster. So I have a typical replacement rate on my herd, but if I want to, you know, increase size of my herd, you know, it might be a decision to buy. So I'm going to walk through a quick example here and show you how genetic selection impacts this decision. So we have our added returns. We sell a heifer you otherwise would have retained. So we're going to sell a weaned heifer calf that I typically would have retained. I'm going to get that cash in this very strong market. I'm going to get the possible revenue from improved genetics. Very difficult to quantify, though, sometimes, right? Weaning weights, we can kind of put a number on that, a dollar amount. We're making some assumptions about future prices, about production. But, you know, how do you put a value on calving ease? You know, we know that's likely to, you know, increase, you know, have more marketable calves potentially. What's the dollar value on that? So very, very difficult to really assign that. Reduced costs, so we're not going to raise that heifer now. So we're not going to have to feed her, the fixed cost, and we're going to earn a little bit of interest on that money we wouldn't have had to spend then. So reduced returns, there's really none here, but the added cost, the big one. I got to buy that heifer back because I want this a one-to-one decision. So I'm either raising it or I'm buying it back at 22 months. So my example here, ran the numbers. Total added returns. So this is that heifer calf. I got a little bit of return on the interest. I didn't include any genetic progress or genetic merit here. We'll get to that in a second. Total added cost. Pretty conservative estimate there. I think $2,700 for a bred female. I wanted to kind of get the close numbers here. I think I could have increased that potentially. So net change, it's pretty obvious. I should be raising instead of buying under this scenario. But there's something also that we need to consider. I didn't include any multi-year gains in genetics in this situation. So what would I need here? I need about 20 pounds of weaning weight per calf per year to really make that a competitive situation. Now, I did it with weaning weights because it's pretty easy. I take the 20, that dollar amount, divide it by 7 calves, $260 per pound for those calves at weaning, and you know I get about 20 pounds of weaning weight. Now calving ease, we talked about that a little bit. I don't know how to really assign a value there, but you know that could get you more competitive as well if you're including that multi-year gain in genetics. I can flip this situation exactly around. So now instead of buying, I'm gonna be raising. Well, what's the multi-year lost opportunity here? So if I'm looking at a one-to-one comparison, I'd have to be willing to give up about $350 in lost genetic merit to consider buying instead of raising. So it really pays to raise in this market, but there's a lot of reasons that people are in the open market for females. I want to expand faster. Genetic selection is key. One more I want to talk about, and this is we kind of looked at buy versus raise. That's kind of in a current, you know, program that we're replacing X amount per year, and we may adjust that on the margins, you know, given some of these results here. But now looking at, should I buy or retain these females at all? Now, I don't want to say, you know, this is a stop sign, do it or don't, but just looking at what the economic returns really look like in this long-run investment. So I thought this was kind of interesting to look how much this market has taken off in the last couple of years. You know, Beef Magazine in 2013 surveyed producers. They expect the bred heifer in 2014, start that calving season, was about $1,600. Quite a bit more, right? I don't have bred heifer prices, but I kind of proxied it looking at Iowa feeder cattle data. So I just took six weight feeder heifers. You know, I think some are actually going for replacement now, even in the feeder cattle market. From really April 2013 to this last year, we've seen the spike in feeder cattle prices, 81% increase in really replacement costs here as a proxy. So I'm going to look at kind of the biggest jumps in history, looking at building the cattle herd, 2015, 1994, and 1981. We look at the cost of this. So I put this in 2014 dollars. You know, we've added only 608,000 head, but it's very costly to do that, and very costly compared to history. If you look back to 1994, at prices today, we would have only been able to add about 854,000 heifers, so quite a few less than we'd seen historically. So there's a lot more capital at stake. I think that risk-reward relationship has been a bit altered, because there's a lot of cash at play, but very exciting times in the industry. You know, I think very important with this is, you know, I'm an economist. I always talk about risk management, you know, price risk management. That's my baby. That's what I talk about. That's what I try to preach. But production risk management is very important in this market, because it's important to have something to sell, especially when we're paying a lot to accrue that. So finally, I want to look at kind of this long-run decision. So looking at the net present value, you know, should I retain or buy heifers? It's pretty simple if the market encourages it to do that. If we look at purely from an investment standpoint, think about this of buying stocks. Why would you buy a stock? The market said I should, right? The market says the stock is going to increase. This is going to pay back my initial investment. So I'm going to invest stocks. This should be, you know, from its purest sense, looking at this investment, does the market encourage it? So we're going to maximize the revenue of these productive calves. I'm not an economist, if I didn't show you an equation, but I want to show you this equation just for a few things to mainly point out that the money you're going to earn on those calves this year, next year, the year after that's worth a lot more than the money you're earning on these calves down the road, right? A dollar today is worth a lot more than a dollar in the future. And we're going to benchmark it with net present value. So net present value, essentially, if it's positive, says I get my rate of return plus X dollars. If it's negative, says it's I get my rate of return but minus that dollars. So I did a simulation here. And again, these are Lee Schultz's numbers. Base situation, I said, well, what are calf prices going to be doing in the next 7 years? So from the beginning, I'm wrong, right? But I did my best guess of what prices are going to look like. I said wean weights for steers are going to average 525, for heifers 485. I said I'm going to spend $2,700 for that replacement female. This last spring, she calved for me this spring. Seven calves I'm going to get out of her, so I'm pretty optimistic. I'm really optimistic that I'm going to get a calf out of her every year, 100% marketable calves. My discount rate is, you know, I'm targeting 5% return. I could increase that. I could decrease that. You know, where's the best use of my money in the market? Maybe I could get higher somewhere else. $750 annual cow cost. I'm glad someone mentioned $700 earlier, because that's a very hard number to get at annual cow cost. So I kind of split the difference, went about $750. So I want to highlight here. So this is the situation of this investment here. I paid $2,700 for the animal. I get seven calves. I'm guaranteeing a calf every year, real optimistic. But look at that situation. I don't pay it back with calves. I pay it back when I sell that cull animal. So not only do I need to get a calf every year, but I better have a pretty good cull animal to sell, and the prices better still be pretty strong. Now, I took into consideration what cold call prices are going to look like in 7 years, but, you know, that's kind of a very risky situation. You know, it does pay back in 7 years, but against that coal price, net present value is $49. So that means that I earned 5% on this investment of $2,700 plus $49. So actually, I could have paid to break even on this investment, essentially, $2,749. 5% rate of return. Pretty good, right? Well, this doesn't represent any one producer, right? So let's look at a little bit of sensitivity around this. Let's say, well, my marketable calves, that's one minus my death loss. So I was saying real optimistic before, 100%. So I'm going to say 95% here. That decreases my net present value to 271. My max bid price was $2,700. It's $2,429 now. Again, I'm still paying this investment back, but it's getting a little bit closer. I still need that call animal to do that. So I said at first situation was 7 marketable calves. Now I'm only going to go 5. So decreasing 2 marketable calves. Well, here we still have, you know, not paying it back with calves, paying it back with the call, 201. So I'm really getting my rate of return minus 201. So it's not investment I should be looking at under these parameters. So this one is a little bit one to heart to get a handle on, but so I increased the discount rate. So my expected discount rate now, or my expected rate of return is 15%. It's a pretty risky business, so that's what I'm saying by increasing that discount rate. So I want to get a higher expected return, you know, larger potential for loss or lower return, but risk-reward relationship. So I increase that. You know, that very much decreases net present value, as I would expect, because I'm requiring a lot more return on my money. Cow costs, I decreased it by $150. Very arbitrary there. But, wow, right? Net present value, $916. Now I could pay $3,600 for that replacement female. $1,100 more, or no, $900 more than I paid in the base scenario, $2,700 there. Cattle prices, maybe they're going to be a little bit stronger than I expect. You know, we're increasing that max bid price of $3,100. Now I'm paying back with calves. Now I'm getting a little bit of kicker. We look at call animals. Weaning weight. So here we can see some genetic progress, right? So think about my base case. Can I improve my weaning weights? Can I improve them 4% through some genetic selection over that productive life of those females? Still at 7 years, still expecting to get one every year. You know, here we're about break even on that situation of paying back in calves, and we get, you know, with the pretty large kicker there with the call animal, max bid price $3,000. So I went through a lot of examples, but now I want to really look at just the margin, because kind of arbitrary where I said 5% more here, 4% more weaning weights. Let's look at for every percent or dollar change, how does that impact my bottom line as far as net present value or max bid price? Essentially the same there. So I had my base case of $49 for net present value. Marketable calves, so it was already 100%, so I'm going to actually decline here for every 1% change in marketable calves. $64 or so in net present value or max bid price for every 1% change in marketable calves. I put a little tilde there because these are discounted values, so it's not exactly linear. So it's kind of ballpark numbers here. Calving years, so for every year increase in calving, remember calving's more important in the beginning than it is in the end, $124 in max bid price. Annual cow costs, for every $1 increase, decrease, change in cost, $579. So for every $100 change in annual cow costs, $579 in max bid price. So costs, you know, very important when we're looking at those discounted over those multiple years. Targeted rate of return, about $80 in max bid price. Coal prices, about $70. Calf and coal prices, wean weights, about $63.26. So through any of these examples, I didn't represent any one individual operation. I think what's most important here is these females, even in the open market, they can pencil out for an individual operation. But it's very important to know what your comparative advantage is in this situation. You know, if it's genetic selection, it's ramping up production. If it's ramping up wean weights, that's important, right? Because that does increase the max bid price that I can pay. If we're looking at some more, you know, lowly heritable traits, but they're management traits, and I'm very strong in management, you know, there's a lot of dollars there that can be captured, you know, and I could pay a higher price for that female because I can do management. So, you know, very much trade-off between pure genetic selection and looking at those management traits. So this is my last slide. So I think 3 points really to focus on for genetic goals. Efficiency, that's the obvious one. Product quality, I mean, the beef industry has done a tremendous job of product quality. We've continued to push prices higher. Since I started at Iowa State, we've been talking about consumer pushback and worried about it, and it really hasn't materialized yet, right? Because we have a quality product in the industry. Consumers value that. And for some reason, they keep declining consumption. Well, it's because higher prices, but it's more offsetting by the higher and higher prices that they are paying. You know, management traits are important. Those management traits are important to take care of times like this, right? It's the extremes. When those ratios are out of balance, that's where management traits and genetic selection is really key. You know, it's pretty simple. Progeny, you know, expectation, anticipation, forecasting, it's a lot easier to do than economic prediction, right? Those factors change considerably. And so, you know, when you look at developing a plan, it should be based on those long-term, you know, averages, long-term trends in the industry, as opposed to what's the fad in the market now, because we know the market changes rather quickly. You know, when it's clearly defined, it's difficult. But think about this market, a lot of moving targets. Consumers' taste preferences change. We know we have producer cost structures change. Think about 700,000 producers are making decisions about the future of this herd. They have a lot of different structures, and that's going to really change a lot of this different makeup. So I leave you with, you know, the current incentives really should provide an economic compass. And my point there is the beef business is heading in the right direction. You know, we can always continue to improve, but, you know, it shouldn't be the roadmap because these economic situations do change considerably. So very much take this as, you know, the business is heading in the right direction and, you know, we continue to evolve as the markets evolve. So I thank you very much for your time. Is there any questions?